You know, you'd think there's but one Christmas story, and there is one story with many constituent parts, but we more or less need all of the Gospels to understand it. There is no birth story in Mark's Gospel at all. In Matthew's Gospel, we have the unique features of the wise men and the flight into Egypt, but it's in Luke's Gospel that we have our most memorable traditions. And I want to read Luke chapter 2, first 20 verses. And I have to confess that no one reads this better than Linus in A Charlie Brown Christmas. But I'm going to try. From the King James. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was the first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. It all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in that same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, an angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see these things which have come to pass, which the Lord hath made known to us. And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen as it was told unto them. Well, that's what happened. And yet there's one more Christmas story in the New Testament. In John's Gospel, it lasts three verses. It doesn't say what happened. It tells us why and what it means. John says simply, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. In him was life, and the life was the light of all. And now the punchline. The light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. In other words, the light shines in the darkness, and the light wins every time. I think of all of the little lights at Christmas. Around our house, it takes plugging and unplugging two outlets and switching three switches to turn on all of our Christmas lights. And this is one tree, one mantle, and one window. Five steps. We're not a millennium household. My nephew and his wife and their two kids, they go, Alexa, Christmas lights. Or Siri, Christmas lights. Or whoever it is that works for Google. Well, we're still a little bit old school, but it's the little lights that tell me that Christ is born and that life is good. I love the Christmas carol, Silver Bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Strings of streetlights, even stoplights, glow of bright red and green. Little lights, stoplights, red, green, Christmas colors. I'm going to push the metaphor a little bit with stoplights, since we encounter them fairly routinely. The red stoplight, I think, enjoins us to stop and perhaps count our blessings, but also to remember that there's a lot in our world that Jesus came to save and still need saving. There is suffering with the stoplight. And yet the green light comes and there is the opportunity for generosity. Suffering, generosity, little lights. I put it into perspective with my students this way. I've got a little thing on my website that's called a world wealth calculator. And you can plug in an annual income and you can find out where you stand worldwide. And I asked my students the other day, what would be a reasonably adequate starting salary for a Texas Tech graduate going to work as a professional in the Metroplex? And there was a range of answers. The average was around $55,000 a year. I thought that could be right, maybe a little generous, but $55,000 a year, which seems like just a reasonable, ordinary, adequate salary to a lot of people, if you plug it into the World Wealth Calculator, means if that's your salary, you have a better way of life than 98.2% of the world's population. 98.2. 6.5 billion people are worse off than you, which puts things into perspective, I think, that there's a lot left to do in the way of bringing peace on earth and goodwill. And I pointed out to them, and I pointed out to us tonight, not to generate a lot of guilt, but to generate the green light, generosity. Generosity, and of course there's the material, charitable generosity, and so on. But I think maybe even more importantly and more of an impact on our world together is a generosity of spirit. Let me illustrate it this way. I was in my office at kind of an odd time the other day, and there was a student waiting outside the office of the guy that has the office two doors down, and he was agitated. It was about 10 after 10 in the morning, and the student was waiting for the other instructor to come and give him the final exam early, as he had requested, and he's 10 minutes late, and he's agitated. And I'm going, well, I don't know what to tell you. Well, can we call him? I said, well, you can't, and I can't, but I can ask the secretary to call him, so I went down and did that. And then I came back, and he said, well, can I talk to the department chair? And I said, well, he's got a line. And I'm going, wait a second. In my own mind, I'm thinking, what is it that you're taking the test early for? Well, I have my medical school interview in 2 days. And I'm going, oh, pre-med, now I get it. You know, who's it all about? And I started to chide him for that, and then I remembered that when I drive around Lubbock, it is sometimes lost on me that the people that go faster than me or slower than me in front of me or cut me off or otherwise annoy me did not get up that morning and say to themselves, as soon as I pick up the dry cleaning, I'm going to annoy Jerry Cook on the road. That probably didn't happen because it's not all about me. That's what I mean by a generosity of spirit. In the face of the 98th percentile that we largely are, we can alleviate some of that suffering with a generosity of spirit if, when we see the little light, we know it's not all about us. It's about what we share. Little lights, even green lights, even stoplights. Second little light, you all have one. And we are going to orchestrate deep feeling in about 5 or 10 minutes, closer to 5. It's all right. One of the features of organized religion is that people who are religious will say from time to time, we know we're in the presence of God. We have an experience of the holy, and we orchestrate that when we dim the lights and light these little lights and sing Silent Night. And it becomes emotional because it's supposed to. There's a spiritual connection in the people who are with us, who we love, and in the light we can see their eyes. There's a memory of those that have gone before us, certainly, and the hope in those that will come after us in these little lights. And if you don't find yourself with a little catch in your throat or even tearing up a little bit, well, there's a long history in this congregation of people who will tell you that a scotch or two before church will help that out. But nonetheless, you should catch a spiritual connection with the people that are here with this little light. And that, technically it's called a theophany, but it truly is an experience of the holy. And it's why the prophet was right when he said, "You shall call his name Emmanuel," which means God with us. And about the second verse of Silent Night, if you start feeling that, it's because you're supposed to. And we've tried really hard to make it happen. Because it's true that God is with us and the Lord is in his holy temple. A little light. And I think of one more little light. You know, we're told that the shepherds were led, we're told that the wise men were led to the manger by following a star. Now, there have been astronomers that have talked about what that might have been and the convergence of planets, and I spent literally a minute and a half on Wikipedia researching this, and I'm not sure anybody knows for sure. But somehow a little light drew them to the place, and they knew that God was with them. But I also imagine that little light, maybe after the wise men left, and maybe after Joseph had fallen asleep, that little light of the star over the manger might have come into where Mary was, maybe the only one awake except for the child. And maybe that little light of the star caught in Jesus' eye and reflected into Mary's, and they understood. They understood that the light shines in the darkness. And I started thinking about the meaning and the metaphor of the star. The star is over the place where Jesus is and where God is. And it occurred to me that all light is starlight. I mean, all energy that we appropriate in various ways, in heating our homes and lighting our rooms or combusting our engines or whatever it is we do with the energy that we receive, the source of all of that energy, whatever grows or is refined, all light is originally sunlight. And the sun is a star, and it's our star. And it occurs to me that that might be the best metaphor for a little light, even though it's pretty massive, that as stars go, it's about middling. But that little light that was the star of Bethlehem, as it comes through and catches Mary's eye and she makes eye contact with the child, she knows that she called his name Emmanuel, God with us, correctly. And I would invite you to both experience and imagine, maybe even orchestrate it, the next time you look into the eyes of someone who loves you, or they look into your eyes, and you catch that light, and you feel what it means to share some love, and you will know that God is with us, and maybe most profoundly, you will know, as you see the light of love reflected in the eyes of someone who loves you, that the light shines in the darkness, and that light always wins. Always wins. Merry Christmas.